Just because you're over there doesn't mean I can't see you. And then I won't come over to you. So you might as well just come over here and get it over with. La la la. Well, I will, but I have my shots. Okay. Tell me, what are you good at?
Drawing?
Could you take that and pass that around for me, please? You're good at drawing? Okay.
Drawing.
Hiding behind Cayenne.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you're pretty good at that. Eli?
Football.
All right. What are you good at, Ella? Come on over.
Playing? Playing stuff.
Playing stuff. Uh-huh. That's a very neat talent that you have.
Yeah. I play with my toys.
You do?
Uh-huh.
And you're good at that?
Uh-huh.
I bet you are.
And I play football with my brothers.
You play football with your brother? You play football. Are you good at it? All right. So this is something different that each of you can do, right? And do well, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you tell me some ways that you are all the same?
Yeah.
You're human? Oh, sure. Just wrap up the whole sermon for me. Go ahead.
I'm a human.
You're a human? There you go.
We're all children of God.
You're all children of God. Go ahead. You're all kids. That's right. What else? Are there ways that you're different? So how are you different?
Some are girls.
Some are girls and some are boys. That's right. Any other ways you're different?
Our personalities.
Personalities are different. That's right. What else?
That's my picture.
Where's your picture? Over here? Over there? That's uh-huh. You all have different pictures,
uh-huh.
Right?
How old we are.
How old you are. So isn't it kind of neat that you can be, you're four? Stop it. Really? You going to college next year? Yeah, probably so. Yeah, yeah. Oh, when you're Eli's age, you go to his school. Excuse us, we're just having a little conversation over here. So isn't it kind of neat that you all have special gifts, right? You have things you can do and do well, that you're all alike in some ways, but you're all very different in other ways. And yet you're all sitting at the table having a good time, aren't you? Mm-hmm. Well, you weren't, but I made you come over. So now you are, right? That's pretty cool. I like it. So you're alike, but you're different all at the same time. Huh, that can be confusing, huh? Not for you, but for those of us who are older, it can be a little confusing. Thank you. And you know what? That was one of Paul's biggest obstacles in the early church, right? One of the biggest obstacles that he was having in the early church was having folks recognize, look, we are trying to be a unified group, but we're all different at the same time. And that we all have different gifts. They don't have to be the same, and they don't have to compete with one another either. And I want you to think about this, because Nancy brought up a good point. We like to think of the early church as having it all together, and we have since blown it. But that's not quite true. From the earliest get-go, one of the things that we share with our ancestors is we get on each other's nerves. We don't always get along. That in our seeking unity, we also come up and against our differences, and sometimes they're hard to reconcile. And yet, in the midst of all that, we still show up here every week, don't we? Mostly. And we bring our gifts in order to create what Robin Myers would call a beloved community. Now, think of that word, beloved. I remember telling someone here, who isn't here today, so don't look around, telling somebody here that my term for God is beloved. And this person was like, oh, that's so personal and intimate. I'm like, yeah, yes it is. Think about beloved. Like, doesn't that grasp you? Like, that just holds on. And then to use that to describe that this is who we are, a beloved community. Now, this is what Paul was trying to teach the early church, how to be a beloved community. And it wasn't all strawberries and flowers, okay? There were other things besides diversity that got in the way. There was exactly the definition of what it means to be a beloved community. Robin Myers is a UCC minister. He wrote a couple of really good books. One is Saving Jesus from the Church, which is a really good one. And the other book that he wrote has to do with spiritual resistance. And he defines the beloved community like this. The beloved community is that which all people seek. Everyone wants to be part of a group. So the beloved community has the advantages of being the community, but it also has the challenge of resistance, recognizing that the early church was about resisting those powers that marginalized others. And this is what Paul was trying to do, bring people into community, but also challenge them to be accepting of all those who came forward. This gets a little peculiar with churches, because we have different ways of defining what community looks like, don't we? And we have different ways of measuring how successful our church is doing. What are some ways that we measure? I know what the answer is going to be before you tell me. But what's the first way that people measure how successful churches are? Ah, butts in the seats, right? That's the theological phrase, right? How many people we have in the seats. And particularly, what kind of people determine how successful the church is being? I'll give you a clue. How many kids show up, right? How many times have you heard, we need to have children? And there is so much anxiety around those things. Of course we want more people to be part of our community. And of course we want children to be part of our community. But when we're relying on those two metrics to decide whether or not we're successful, our anxiety goes straight up. I'll tell you, before I was pastor here, I actually interviewed in a few other places. Say it isn't so. They didn't hear me. But, I've always liked you best, whoever said that, Sandy. But here's something interesting, and here's how I knew I blew this interview. I blew it. I met with this church, and they were looking for a pastor who could increase their numbers, right? And in the interview, oh, it was a great interview. I knew, I had him right here, eating out of the palm of my hand, right? Yeah, my ego was intact. We were good to go. We got to the part where they said, look, we have enough money in an endowment. Isn't that funny? We don't have one. That's why I'm laughing. We have enough money in our endowment that if we can continue to collect the same amount of pledges every year, we can survive for the next 10 years. I know, right? That's pretty good. But after that, we don't know where we're going to go. So, Claire, how are you going to increase our numbers so that we don't die? And I looked at them and I said, well, everything dies. Can you see where maybe I blew it? I said, but the point isn't that you could be dying. The point is, how do you want to be remembered when you're gone? How do you want this community that you live in, both locally and globally, to remember you? How do you want your legacy to appear as a Christian in the 21st century doing the work that we all say we are called to do? Because if you are hiring me to come in and worry about numbers, I promise you our numbers will not increase because we're going to be worried about numbers. But if we are about identifying who we are called to be, and to whom we belong, and why we do what we do, then chances are we're going to be just fine, regardless of outcome. I didn't get the job. But that's the truth. There's a lot of anxiety about living and dying in the church. And a lot of times we put a lot of emphasis on the wrong focus. We focus on numbers. We focus on programs. But we don't necessarily focus on ministry. We don't necessarily focus on our gifts and our ability to make sure that no matter how long we are on this planet, either as individuals or as a corporate entity, we have the potential to do great things. You are going to hear during our annual meeting today all of the things that we have been able to accomplish. It's amazing. When I have to write my annual report, I have Donna telling me, will you stop it already? It's 20 pages. She's not. But it goes on forever and ever because of what we're able to say, this is what we've done. And there are some areas where we need to do better, and there are some areas where we need to plan better, especially in light of the fact that we have a pretty intense year coming up. But we are called to be the beloved community. We are called as such because we care and we love for each other and because we are willing to step up and be a resistance against all of those things that make it impossible to do the work of our beloved. So today we get to meet, we get to celebrate, we get to panic a little bit, but then we also get to recognize that our identity as a beloved community, as a community that embraces diversity in spite of our unity and is unified in spite of our diversity, is able to do great things. That we are truly living into the call of what Paul was trying to do with the early church in Corinth. When Paul said that they all might be one, that we will all be together, that we will all recognize that this is what we are meant to be, and this is who we are meant to be. So my question to you is very simple. Do you wish to continue this journey? Do you wish to be challenged? Do you wish to be the voice of resistance? Do you wish to stand up for others? Do you wish to give voice to the voiceless? And do you wish to continue in the mission and ministries of Vista Grande? Now, before you answer, I made it sound like you have a choice. But in truth, through your baptism, you've already made the choice. Through your showing up here, you've made the choice. Through your ongoing commitment to the work and ways of this church, you've already said yes. And so I ask that, knowing already what the answer will be. Let the people say, amen.